Welcome, Eagles, to another episode of Trad Cat Night Radio. I am Eric Kajewski, founder and owner of Trad Cat Night, the most viewed and followed traditional Catholic website worldwide, ranked number one in the world by Alexa as it relates to traditional Catholicism, a top 25,000 website in the world now, ladies and gentlemen. So I appreciate all the prayers and support, and we, as an intention, try to bring the best possible guests on. And today I have another blockbuster talk for you today. We're going to stay within the realm or areas, if you will, of sustainable development, green economy, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, new economic order, however you want to put it. I mean, I would just simply label it eventually it's just a Luciferian new age from our perspective. But I have with me today Patrick Wood, and we're going to be talking technocracy. Now, he is a leading and critical expert on sustainable development, green economy, Agenda 21, 2030 Agenda, and historic technocracy. He is the author of Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, came out in 2015, and co-author of Trilaterals Over Washington, Volumes 1 and 2, with the late Anthony Sutton. Now, Wood remains a leading expert on the elitist Trilateral Commission, their policies and achievements in creating their self-proclaimed new international economic order, which is the essence of sustainable development on a global scale. Now, I was just talking with Patrick just briefly off the air. As many of you know, I've been warning of this character who I believe is the biblical Antichrist, which ties in with all these areas we're going to talk about today, folks. His name is Maitreya. Start getting used to this name. He's going to show up after the economic collapse, and we'll get into that in a little bit later. But without further ado, let's hand it over to Mr. Wood. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, how you got involved in this area, lay out a definition of technocracy, and get into your book, Patrick.
Wow, that's a tall order. Well, my name is Patrick Wood. That's the basic of the matter. I have been following globalization and the globalization process for almost 40 years now. And I started way back in the late 1970s when I started writing with the late Professor Anthony Sutton regarding an elitist organization back in those days known as the Trilateral Commission. And this organization was co-founded by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1973 with the ostensible purpose of creating a new international economic order. Both Sutton and I came from an economic background. I was never taught economics, but I have throughout my life studied economics. I studied in college, of course, too, but I have been a market analyst, a financial analyst, been in and about that industry all my life. But we wrote about the Trilateral Commission back in those days. As best we could see it, we didn't understand that the new international economic order really had to do with technocracy. That this was something I discovered after Anthony Sutton passed in 2002. And I started studying like crazy, did a lot of original research on it. It was actually a historical movement from the 1930s. I had never heard of it. I thought that I knew something about U.S. history, but I didn't know anything about technocracy. And it was a group of prominent scientists and engineers, many of whom were from Columbia University, by the way, who decided by themselves that they would create a new economic model based on resources rather than supply and demand, and based on energy currency. And they did this kind of in a vacuum, if you will, at Columbia, and they later, a number of them started a movement, became very popular in the United States. This was during the heat of the Depression, of course. And this movement had at one time over 500,000 card-carrying, dues-paying members. It was a huge movement, real big in Canada as well. And it just didn't hit the history books in America. I won't bore you with that why. I found out why, but it didn't hit the history books. That's why I never heard of it. But as I started digging into it, I realized that this model of this new economic model was the same economic model that the Trilateral Commission picked up on in 1973 with Zbigniew Brzezinski. He had written a book called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And he was also, by the way, a professor at Columbia University at the time who wrote the book. So, there's a little bit of a connection there, I suppose. But we didn't understand that in the early days. I understand it now, and I've made the connection between the two. That's really what my book is all about, Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. The entire doctrine of technocracy was bundled up and fed to the United Nations, and really starting in 1992 with the introduction of Agenda 21 at the very first Earth Summit that took place in Rio de Janeiro. And Agenda 21, at that point, was essentially a Trilateral Commission doctrine that had been cooked up by a lady, a Trilateral Commission member from Europe, called by the name of Gro Harlem Brundtland. And she had been the chair of the United Nations Commission that ended in 1987, called the Brundtland Commission, that created a publication called, a book called Our Common Future. That became the basis for Agenda 21, which came along in 1992. So the United Nations has taken this concept of sustainable development, green economy, and terms like that. They repackaged the name technocracy into these other names like sustainable development, and they're spreading it on a global basis. We see this now everywhere. Everything is sustainable, right? It's turned into an adjective. Anything can be sustainable now. But if you go back to the original definition, sustainable development was an economic term, not a political term. It was an economic term. And they fully intended to replace capitalism and free enterprise with this new economic system. That's an astounding statement to make. But early last year, the head of climate change at the United Nations, her name was Christiana Figueres, she said at a press conference in Europe, this didn't hit American press, you might imagine, she said, this is a direct quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves a task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution," close quote. She let the cat out of the bag. The United Nations is fully intending to replace capitalism and free enterprise with this cockeyed, off-the-wall, utopia-like economic system called sustainable development, which I very dogmatically say is basically warmed over technocracy from the 1930s. And here we are today. This is what we're struggling with in the world economic space. And I might add, technocracy and capitalism are like matter and antimatter. They don't, not only do they not mix, but when one comes in contact with the other, you have disintegration. And people are wondering why the world is in such economic turmoil today. I can tell you why, because there's two economic titans battling it out in the global space for supremacy. Technocracy on one hand, which is sustainable development, and capitalism and free enterprise on the other. One is gonna live and one is gonna die. It's that simple. In the end, one is gonna live and one is gonna die. The question is, which one? The United Nations says it's gonna be sustainable development that wins. Most of us in America still who realize this is what has made America great, was free enterprise in the first place, we're saying, no, we don't want technocracy. We don't want sustainable development. We want to keep the economic system that has made America what it is today. So I'll stop there, I guess, let you interject some stuff.
That was really great. You know, we were talking off air here for a minute, just to add to that whole train of thought with sustainable development. The Vatican just came out today on Vatican Radio and proposed ecological island in the Vatican aims for optimal disposal of waste. And again, this just came hot off the presses within the past 24 hours. A so-called ecological island has sprung up in the Vatican with aim to recycle and dispose waste in the most sustainable manner. So the point is, from our perspective, real Catholics aren't duped by what's been going on since Vatican II. And the pre-Vatican II popes warned of this one world socialist republic that other people just label the New World Order, which is economically based. And so as a Catholic, when we hear John Paul II come out and support this New World Order and talk about economics, and Benedict XVI did that, that's not from a Catholic perspective. That's coming from the wrong side of the fence, folks. So we have to know and understand it. Now, what's the end game from your perspective in all this? I mean, we would argue that in the end, it truly is religious, Patrick. I mean, you know, the Antichrist, when he comes, he's going to, you know, formalize a one world religion. He'll have all religions below him. Obviously, economics is going to be a part of that, tying in with that whole biblical, if you will, mark of the beast system where everyone's chipped, hooked up to a supercomputer. It seems to me like it's just control and manipulation in the end. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, it really is. And since you brought up the religious aspect of this, there's definitely religious flavor in all this stuff. And I trace it back to a religious philosophy called scientism. Maybe we can discuss that later.
Yeah.
But there was a big convention in 2014. It was called the Interfaith Summit on Climate Change. That's a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
And all of the religions of the world went. And not just Christian-based religions, but all of the other religions, Eastern religions, they were all there. Mm-hmm. And the World Council of Churches put out a press release right after that conference. And this is what they concluded. They were there, of course. And this is what they concluded. A direct quote from their press release. They said, "There has never been such a large amount of religious environmental activity in one location in the history of the world. This week will mark a watershed in the history of religion. It will be the time that people remember as the time when the world's faiths declared themselves irrevocably as green faiths." Close quote.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then we have we have Cardinal Turkson coming about, and I think he's a New World Order puppet too. He's kind of Francis's right man. He goes around the world and gives his environmentalist speech based upon Francis's, one of his latest encyclicals on the environment. Again, it's all propaganda, folks. It's laying down the tracks for this Maitreya character. You know, I just wanted to add in the end, when Maitreya does show up, you know, he's kind of the umbrella and all the religions below him, which he'll unite humanity basically in all this. That's what he wants to do. It's going to be a self-realization program. So, you know, from our perspective, I know it ties in what we're talking about today because, you know, really in the end, it's turning away from focus on God and the church and moving focus onto earth, focus onto man, focus on materialism, and focus on science. And I would just add, on top of what Patrick has already said, the Freemasonic sect has said, in conjunction with talking about its infiltration of the church, that they said that science and reason would overtake faith, which is that's a pretty profound statement right there. But I'll allow you to pick up on that. Maybe talk a little bit more about scientism and even humanism, which we talk about too here at Tradcat Night.
Right. I want to give you a good definition of technocracy first. We've already introduced it as a term.
Sure.
We know it's from the 1930s. Already said that it was founded at Columbia University initially. They'd been talking about it for 10 years before that, but Columbia really kind of brought them all together. And the Technocrat magazine, which was one of their official publications, in 1938 gave a great definition of technocracy. I use this all the time because it's authoritative and it's a good one. This is how they define technocracy. This is a direct quote. "Technocracy is the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population," close quote. Now, you can see this is an all-encompassing statement. And I want to say, too, I'm not bashing science. I love science. I love technology, okay? I'm not anti-science or technology. There are many wonderful, head-screwed-on-right scientists and you know, engineers around the world. I know a lot of them myself. There's only a few scientists and engineers that think this way, okay? It's not the vast majority, but the ones that are into this radical ideology of technocracy are really a piece of work. As you see, as you look at this definition, the science of social engineering, these people believe that truth cannot be found except through science. In other words, if science doesn't produce any particular factoid, it can't exist. So forget the Bible right off the bat. Forget anything of a supernatural nature or of a faith-based nature.
Right.
They don't believe it. They believe the only thing that will work anywhere in the universe is their scientific method. And they have focused their so-called scientific method on an economic paradigm that says they and they alone will decide what to produce and what to distribute to the entire population. This is an economic model of epic proportions. They want to control 100% of the means of production and consumption. And they want to do it to the entire population. You see the word entire appears twice here. And if you ever wonder, why do we hear things like No Child Left Behind, and we hear about in 2030 Agenda, the word inclusion and inclusiveness. They want everybody on board in this thing. Nobody's going to be left outside the system. They're going to be forced into the system, whether they like it or not. But it is an economic model, and they think that they have the exclusive lock on truth and that everybody else is screwed up. That means you and me, by the way. And we have no right to declare anything to be true. Well, I just dare anybody to go home and talk to your wife, if you're married, and say, honey, I just heard a guy say that science has concluded that love cannot be proven. Oh, I guess if it can't be proven, I guess I was just deluding myself. I really don't love you, although we make great roommates. But let's just set some new ground rules. Well, I'll tell you what, you'll be sleeping in the doghouse for the next 6 months. And, love does exist. And emotions exist, anger, envy, all the different, some negative, some good. But emotions exist. They can't be proven in a laboratory. They can't be proven by the scientific method. But these people deny all those things. And they reduce mankind to being nothing more than just a container of chemicals, of molecules, and atoms that are no different than the animals, than the animal kingdom. And if man is devalued to that point where he has no value, I'll tell you what, everything comes unhinged, Eric. All philosophy comes unhinged. All religion becomes unhinged because it's okay. We can kill babies, for instance, in the womb still, even up to the time of birth. We can approve of euthanasia. We can be okay with China's massive harvesting of organs from prisoners that they're selling these organs all over the world. You see, it when man is devalued, all this stuff starts to come into place. Absolutely incredible. But technocracy is, as it's expressed now, with sustainable development. Technocracy and sustainable development are about getting all the resources in the world out of our hands and into the hands of the global elite.
That's it.
It's a resource grab. I can't boil it down to anything more simple. It is simply a resource grab of all land, all water, the air, if possible, and everything in between. They want to take it out of the hands of quote-unquote selfish, self-interested individuals like you and me, and they want to put it into a global common trust where they can meter out the resources as they see fit, and they can tell you and I exactly what we can and cannot consume, and basically we'll be wards of the state. I have likened this, by the way, to neo-feudalism, where we're back to kind of the idea a few own everything, and the rest of everybody are kind of squatters on the back 40, if you will, where we have no rights, no ownership, and we live and even exist at the pleasure of the land barons. This is where this thing is headed. Scientific dictatorship used to control the people within the system. And that's what my little definition of technocracy is all about here. It's the science of social engineering. Well, I got news for you folks. If the hair doesn't go up on the back of your neck when you hear that term, you're not paying attention. The science of social engineering is scientific dictatorship. Even the great author, everybody has heard of Aldous Huxley before, but his name, the book, Brave New World.
Yeah.
Brave New World was written in 1932 when Columbia University was actually housing in Hamilton Hall in the basement the technocracy movement. This is where Aldous Huxley got the bulk of his inspiration to write the book Brave New World. If you haven't read it, folks, go get a used copy of it and read the book again, and you'll see what technocracy is all about, where it will end up, where it's headed.
Yeah, it's quite unbelievable. I mean, there's so many different directions we can go from here, Patrick. You know, one of the things I've been warning about, too, is how the whole alien agenda kind of fits into this. It's a little bit off topic, but the reason why I bring that up is because when Maitreya arrives, they're going to say there's a new science now invoked into the world. They're going to look at, you know, fundamentalists, that's what they label us, fundamentalists, as, you know, creationists. You know, you've been interpreting the Bible wrong all along. And so in that sense, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how many people kind of fall for this phony science. But I wanted to get back to this whole topic of humanism, because I heard you talk about it a little bit.
Yep.
You know, this is one of the things that I had been warning about within the Catholic Church, because essentially we went from a philosophy of Thomism, which is basically common sense and logic, which was laid down by St. Thomas Aquinas, probably the greatest mind in church history. But then we had from Vatican II, they actually call it the new humanism or the integral humanism. So, you know, from scripture, when you change the philosophy, your doctrine changes. So now instead of being Christ-centered and church-centered as Catholics / Christians, we're now, again, man-centered, which is the second step in Satanism, as Father Hess pointed out. So what I'm saying is Freemasonry, socialism, when you study, it's all very interconnected to humanism. And I wanted to get your kind of analysis and take on that whole area.
Well, yes, humanism has a long history, as you know. It can be traced back even to the Huxley family that we just mentioned, with Aldous Huxley and his brother Julian Huxley. They were really instrumental in launching the humanist movement back in the 20s and the 30s. And today, with the addition of science to the modern world, the humanism philosophy, for many people, has springboarded into transhumanism, which is really interesting because it's the application of science to change the condition of man. And look at it this way. If technocracy is going to change the condition of society, you must have good global citizens to live and populate that society. That's what transhumanism is all about. Transhumanists claim that they will eventually escape death altogether.
Yeah.
And that they will escape the limitations of mankind today. And this is an interesting philosophy. And obviously, it has jettisoned any biblical thought because, immortality is a condition that's reserved for God. Man is not chosen to be immortal.
Exactly.
In fact, the New Testament says very clearly, it's appointed for man once to die, and then comes the judgment. So I think they're going to be very disappointed in the end, okay? But in the meantime, they're intending to apply the scientific method and science in general to changing the condition of man to become immortal, to become omniscient, to become omnipresent, where they can travel the universe as ones and zeros, if you will, in a computer algorithm or something. And it will create an immortal breed of mankind, gods, if you will. And many transhumanists have actually said, we will be God.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too. I mean, it falls along the same line of what we say here, where in St. Augustine talks about the city of God versus the city of man. We have, in a sense here, a new Tower of Babel being constructed where it's man trying to become God, without the aid of grace. I mean, they're literally trying to take out the whole, you know, the essential element of that. And that's, you know, this whole new utopia, the pre-Vatican II popes warned of. They literally labeled the Vatican II popes as insane, miscreant, John Lennon-type dreamers. And I'm not bashful at all about saying that, about the leaders in our church. But would you argue that scientism, I mean, essentially is a religion?
Absolutely, it is a religion. And it's interesting that one of the early fathers of scientism is also credited as being one of the early fathers of technocracy. His name was Henri de Saint-Simon. In English, we say, oh, Henry. Henri de Saint-Simon. But he died in 1825, born in 1760. And he wrote about scientism quite a bit. And his primary disciple, Auguste Comte, who later became the father of sociology, by the way, they preached a priesthood of scientism, that where these priests would be the mediators, if you will, between science and mankind. This is what he wrote. And this Saint Simon wrote in somewhere I don't know, around 1820, I think. He said, quote, "A scientist, my dear friends, is a man who foresees. Is because science provides the means to predict that it is useful, and the scientists are superior to all other men," close quote. You can see everything you need to see here about scientism. Foresees, for instance, they think that he's saying that it predicts. This is like Bible prophecy, right? They can see the future. Well, man can't see the future. Maybe God can, but man can't see the future. And secondly, are scientists really superior to all other men? I say no. Every scientist engineer I know, they put their pants on the same way that you and I do. I don't think that, you know, just because they have a PhD after their name, which some people say means piled high and deep, I don't think they have any more right to being superior than the dog catcher down the street, right? Yeah. But this is the heartbeat of scientism, and it does require a priesthood. And they both preach that, by the way. And in that sense, it is religion, and here's why. It worships science and the scientific method, exclusive of all other competing religions. And it does predict the future, and it does require a priesthood to declare its truth to the ignorant masses. Now, and this is their attitude. You can imagine, I say this tongue-in-cheek now, imagine in olden days down in, you know, in the Aztec nations and wherever, some nation back down, mythical nation down in South America, where there's a volcano and there's a village at the bottom of the volcano, and they're very superstitious. And there's a priest in the village that knows, he knows the god of the volcano. He can talk to him. He understands what he says. So once a month, this priest goes up the mountain to the volcano, and he listens very carefully, you know, tilts his ear, listens very carefully to what the volcano is saying to him to take the message down the hill to the people that are just totally ignorant down the hill in the village below. And so he comes down one month. He says, look, this is the deal, guys. The volcano is really ticked. We've done something. We've really made him mad. And the only thing to stop him from raining down fire and brimstone on your village and killing us all is that you must sacrifice two virgins at the next full moon. So get busy and go find yourself two virgins. Well, of course, the volcano doesn't speak because it's a volcano. The priest is just full of it, just making stuff up. And he comes down, and yet the people believe the priest, you know, the volcano, and they say, oh, we better get to, you know, whose version is it going to be? And they pick some poor young thing, take her up the volcano and throw her in head first, and think that the volcano just goes on as normal. It never is, it's not going to change. And they think they've done something good. It's just total deception. But this is the way this kind of priesthood works with science. These so-called scientific experts listen carefully to the oracle of science, and then they come and tell you and I what it means and what we have to do about it. Why we need to recycle. Why we need to take all the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. That'll kill us all, by the way. But kill all the plants. But, you know, they come back with a prescription for us, and the people go, oh, the science has spoken. Well, science said this, and science said that, and scientists have a study, and we better do what they say, or we're going to be really screwed up. And, you know, we're all going to die. Probably the seas are going to rise, and all the coastal cities are going to go underwater, and billions of people are going to die as a result of climate change if we don't do all this stuff right away. You see, this is absolute hysteria that's been taken on in the world. And science is the culprit here, you see. It's always science says this, science says that. And who the heck are these priests? Well, I'll tell you, people like Al Gore. He's one of them. He listens very carefully to the oracle of science. And he comes and says, we're surely going to all die, probably probably by 2025 if we don't stop climate change, climate global warming. Well, thank you, Al. Where did you hear this? Could you give us the telephone number?
That's it. Yeah, I think it's very bizarre. I wanted to add a few points here. First of all, I want to make sure that all of our listeners, whether you're Catholic or not, I mean, the Catholic Church doesn't condemn science and reason and the arts and all this, but it is subordinate to big F faith. Science is not the king of the mountain, so to speak, and that's what we're trying to paint a picture here, is that everything is completely inverted. I mean, from our perspective, it's prophetic. They want to get rid of the faith altogether in Rome, which they will do, in my opinion, here soon, as anti-Pope Francis will step to the side, and this character called the False Prophet, who's tied in with the Maitreya, will show up. I wanted to add that. Also, there was a pre-Vatican II Pope, Pope St. Pius X, which warned us of this one-world religion, warned all these areas we're talking about today, and he labeled it the impotent humanitarianism. Now, it's really funny. You're talking about the volcano talking, and it's funny, but it's really not, because it truly shows you the times that we live in. When I go on radio shows and give my talk, the two things I found this past year is how intricately connected environmentalism and feminism are to bringing about a return to ancient paganism, which is one of the things that the early church fathers said, that not only Rome would happen in Rome again, but eventually the whole wide world. So now, as Patrick had mentioned, he's talking about, we have to recycle, we got to carpool, we got to do this or that. But you have Francis coming out and saying, we're sinning against the earth. He's even using phrases like Mother Earth, like Gaia, Patrick. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, this is the direction that we're heading, is literally Mother Earth worship. And that's a part of the whole new Earth Charter, Gorbachev, the New Age religion, things like that. I mean, it ties directly into this. I mean, it's pretty frightening, Patrick.
Well, yes. And feminism, the idea of feminism, not the modern context of it, but the idea of feminist superiority goes back millennia. You look at the old mystic religions and the idol religions from the Old Testament, you'll see the concept of the mystical religions. It's all female, and Gaia is female as well. The Earth is called Mother Earth, not Father Earth. And so, what you see today with all of these movements that are pushing us this way, it emasculates man completely. I say men, not mankind, but it emasculates men to become more feminine. We see this in the LGBT movement, for instance. We see this in the transgender movement. We see this in just the clothing styles now, what people are wearing. Guys have been tricked, if you will, or some pushed into, browbeaten into, whatever, into losing the whole concept of being a man, being, macho, if you will. And they've moved towards this feminine thing where being feminine is cool now.
Metrosexual.
Crazy. I don't go for it. Well, I'm an old guy, right? So I don't go for that at all. But, the young people today are really into this. You look at hairstyles, you look at their clothing styles, you look at their mannerisms and stuff. And I'm not saying, that doesn't mean that they're gay, by the way. But, you just look at the way they're sizing up. It's like everybody's bowing down to the female whatever, anymore. And we should be, I'm happy for females, by the way. I'm married. I have my love, my mother. She gave birth to me. I owe everything to her. But I don't worship her either, right?
Now, let me ask you this. I meant to try to get a hold of this talk and listen to it. I've been on the Dave Hodges show, too, and you were on it recently. And the title of that talk was called Agenda 21, Cities of the Future. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of that talk? I'm just assuming that you were talking more about the United States here, or maybe you were talking in general. I mean, how are the cities going to look different, maybe even over the next 3 to 5 years? What are they trying to do, these technocrats?
Oh, wow. Well, there was just a big meeting that the United Nations held this last month called Habitat 3. And this was the third in a series over a number of decades that they held on, how mankind should live. And out of that meeting, this is kind of like of the magnitude of the Rio conference in 1992. Out of Habitat 3, a document was produced that the whole world signed on to called the New Urban Agenda. New Urban Agenda. And by the way, I post the full text of that document on my website, technocracy.news, and you can go there and see it. Just type in New Urban Agenda and we'll come up. but it's only 22 pages, and it's worth reading because you have to hear this stuff from their own, you know, their own lips. You just can't make this stuff up, and you don't want to trust me to tell you what it says. You just got to go read it. But I'll tell you, here's the idea. They want to completely engineer cities to where, based, in my opinion, people are reduced to being like ants in an ant farm, where you know, where there's a little window into it, and the big people can look in and see all the little ants, and we're the little ants in the city that are going to be managed and micromanaged, to where there will be no choice. It'll literally become a scientific dictatorship to these people. They want to control everything. They want to monitor everything. They want to control everything. They want to completely re-engineer the food systems that deliver food to the cities. They want to re-engineer healthcare. I mean, there isn't anything that's not covered in this new urban agenda. And they have committed, the nations of the world have committed to this. You can't imagine how this conference took place in Quito, Ecuador. Now, I've never been to Quito, Ecuador. It's a big city in Ecuador. It's on the equator. Sure. And Eric, there were 50,000 people descended on Quito to attend this Habitat 3 conference. 50,000 people flew in there to do this. And of course, they didn't all get into the main hall at once. But it took place all over the city. And the main hall, with great hoopla, all the leaders of the world were there. Our president was not there, but all the leaders of the world were there. And they signed this document that they're committing to the new urban agenda. And this is what they're going to do. They're going to go out and try and enforce this on every town, every city, every hamlet, every unincorporated little township in the entire world, including in the United States.
So it's incredible. Yeah, so basically we break that down. We were talking about the emerging police state, I guess, if you will. I mean, you know, the rise of the drones. We got computers. I'm sure they're listening to us right now. Video game systems now even, you know, watching us. The collection of data. It hits every area. You know, vaccines, food, housing. That's one area that I've been focusing on because that's what Maitreya will do. That's actually the second thing that he wants to do when he comes onto the scene is to provide housing. Now, I want to look into it a little bit further. Maybe you even have the answer. I'm not sure if that means FEMA camps at a certain point. You know what I mean? Like, are they going to say, oh, this is the best place to be. We'll feed you here. And, of course, we know what will happen from there. But, even the war on terror. You know, every time we see a terrorist event, Patrick, it's like, what happens? There's more boots on the ground. So it's becoming normalized. You know, take a look at France, where they just have thousands of troops now wandering the streets now. That are, you know, supposedly protecting us, and we know ultimately it's in Orwellian fashion, 1984 fashion. But that's it, folks. I mean, goodness, you know, the emerging police state. Maybe you could follow up a little bit on that point, but then also talk about the rise in censorship, because I know you did a recent article on this talking about 2/3 of the world's internet users are already censored, and I am, by the way, on Twitter. I can't even post my own articles on Twitter anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it. Well, the idea of moving people into cities is very well documented at this point. It started out with Agenda 21. They talked about population reduction back in 1992. Many people said back in that day that the Earth can only support probably less than a billion people. We've got 7 billion, over 7 billion now. They never said how they're going to get rid of the other 6 billion, but that, you know, basically said that the Earth can't carry a load more than about probably 800 million people. So that doctrine has already been vetted, and it's there. It's in the Agenda 21 document. You can go to Amazon and buy the book, for Pete's sake. I recommend that you do. If you still think it's a myth, buy the book and read it then. You'll see it isn't a myth. I didn't print it. They printed it. The United Nations moniker is right on it. So you've got a group of people that are committed to reducing the population of the Earth by whatever means they can. Maybe it's just by attrition, China has a one-child left behind policy and so on. But there's been a movement throughout this thing to move people from rural settings into cities, get them into cities where they can be managed like ants in an ant farm. That's my view of it. And what we saw just recently in China, an astounding article came out of China that the and China is a technocracy, by the way, in almost the purest sense of the word. There's some things they haven't implemented yet, but they are a technocracy run by engineers and scientists. They have decided in China to move some 200 million farmers off of their rural land into the cities by the year 2020. That's only 4 years away. How do you move that number of people? That's 12% of the rural population, by the way. They're going to move them into the cities. What do farmers do? What can a farmer do in a city to support himself? He's a farmer, for Pete's sake. He doesn't have any training to do anything else. He can't put together iPhones or something, something like that. They're going to drive these people off the land into the city against their will. They're just going to take their land away. Sorry, Buster, you're out of here. You've maybe had it for five generations, but it's over. Get into the city. You're going to live in this little micro apartment we made for you, and that's it.
Now, do you think that ties in with them just trying to control the food supply? Obviously, if no one's
well, now wait, it gets better. In the same press release that came out of China, it said, point blank, it said the land left over from the vacated farmers will be converted into factory farms.
Oh, geez.
That will be, you know, run by the global food chain guys, you know? So they're going to come in and they're going to plow up all these patties or whatever, and they're going to make giant tracts of factory farms that will be run by, you know, the experts, and that will be run by robots, and that will be run by companies like Monsanto to plant all the wonderful GMO seeds that they prepared for the world to eat.
Well, that's another reason why they're attacking people who consider themselves preppers and going off the grid. I think you can't even go off the grid in Florida. I think that's actually against the law.
Right.
I had some survivalists on the show, talking about that preppers. So, yeah, I mean, we see that trend starting here in the United States. And, yeah, I mean, it's we're right there, folks. We're on the horizon to some very, very serious things about to happen in the world. Now, what can you say about the role of quote-unquote social justice as it relates to all of these various areas, whether it's economics, politics, religion? Break that down for us a little bit from what you're seeing.
Wow, yeah, social justice has a long history. It was, it can be traced back into the 1800s for sure. But social justice basically means taking from one group and giving to another group. So group A has some stuff. Group B is challenged to go look at group A's stuff. Isn't that nice stuff they have? You don't have that stuff. They do. Well, you ought to go ask them for some of that stuff and see if they'll give it to you. And when they don't, you ought to demand that they give you something. And when they don't, you ought to, you know, go to war or whatever, get after them and destroy them so they can't have that stuff. At least if you can't have it, make sure they can't have it either. Well, that's the basis of social justice. It's one group taking from another group what doesn't belong to them. And, you know, in simple terms, social justice is nothing more than thievery, it's theft. And the Bible talks about that even in the Ten Commandments, right? Thou shalt not steal. It's just, you don't need to go much further to see what's wrong with it. But social justice has been used for every cockeyed, thing that's happened in our country in the last 100 years, well, at least in the last 40 years. You know, all these groups that are rioting, that are protesting, all about social justice. Communism, Marxism, socialism, it's all about social justice. And even worse, you'll see at the United Nations, if you go to the UN website and search on their website for the term social justice, you will not believe how many times that word appears in their literature. It's a main core doctrine, social justice. Sometimes you see it phrased as social equity. It means the same thing. It's the redistribution of wealth, pure and simple.
Yeah, that's what I equate it to. I just call it phony equality. But yeah, it also ties in with Freemasonry too. That's something we've been pointing out. And again, get to Maitreya's website. You're going to see all of this. His social justice program is the same as Vatican II's, folks. You know, those people are still following that. You better start waking up now. You're being led right into the formal New Age religion. I wanted to get your take on immigration, quote-unquote immigration, and how this ties in. I mean, I'm assuming that you kind of see it as a Trojan horse as us, but how does that kind of fit in with the technocrat, utopia, if you will.
Well, absolutely. The sustainable development crowd has said that sustainable development cannot be achieved outside of creating a multicultural society. That means everybody, big pile on, everybody into the same deal.
Jambalaya.
Now, yeah, the pile on. And you have, like one big rugby match, right? You have people running around Europe like Peter Sutherland, for instance. He's the envoy to the United Nations Secretary General for migration policy. Well, Peter Sutherland is the head of the Trilateral Commission in Europe. He's a mucky-muck extraordinaire. And since 2006, he's been the guy running around Europe forcing or, you know, twisting their arm, the nations in Europe's arm, to relax the immigration standards and to set up quotas that they're willing to take of immigrants, of migrants. Now, this was before the invasion from the south, by the way. This was planned way back when, on the basis of accomplishing sustainable development. And now that the invasion has hit Europe, Peter Sutherland and the United Nations are continuing to go around to these nations saying, don't you dare reduce your quotas, because these migrants need a place to live, they need a place to stay, and whatever. And so Sutherland is still touting the same thing throughout Europe. You know, stay the course, do exactly what you've been doing. Now, our open border on the southern border of Mexico is exactly the same policy, Eric, that they have in Europe. And for the same reasons, I might add. The border is to encourage open migration from other nations so that it will change the nature of the target nations into a multicultural society where they think that that it will sustainable development will be able to thrive. And of course, that is, to me, with my economic background, I could tell you that is absolute nonsense. It is absolute lunacy and fantasy that these people come up with these ideas. But this is where it comes from. This is where the whole migration invasion concept comes from. It's a Trilateral Commission policy that has been set in play in order to create the new international economic order. And I'm sad to say, I hate to even suggest this, but I will, that the economic collapse that we see coming at some point, could be a year, could be next week, who knows. Yeah. But whenever it comes, their idea is that when capitalism collapses, out of the ashes, technocracy can rise.
Like
the great phoenix, that's right.
Yeah, it was on the cover of The Economist, I think, yeah.
That's right. So, you know, I think this is how they're looking at this. I won't judge their, their motives completely. But this is the way I see it at this point. But we definitely can connect this policy of open immigration and open borders to the United Nations, to technocracy and sustainable development, and also to the Trilateral Commission. 100% connected.
Yeah, it goes back to my point earlier. They want a united humanity. Again, from our perspective as Catholics, they want to do away with the Catholic/Christian religion altogether, move under this Luciferian New Age self-realization program, under this Antichrist figure. They want complete control, complete manipulation of the population. I would just add, too, we have to remember in Old Testament times, God punished, after the Tower of Babel, and broke people down into the nations and with different tongues for a reason. And that's, I think, actually the slogan of the European Union parliamentary building, where they talk about, a united Europe, one tongue, something like that. And it's and literally their picture, or the model of that parliamentary building, is the Tower of Babel, which is quite interesting. I wanted to shift more into domestic matters here, because I know a lot of people are going to be asking, with what's happened and transpired here in this country with the elections, how does the election of Trump, does it change anything? Does it negate some of what these technocrats are trying to do? Does it slow it down? Or is he a part of the game? that it's just, you know, he's being purported on the surface as an outsider, but he's really not. I mean, what's your take?
Well, you know, it's too early to tell yet, in my estimation. I'm going to wait another couple of months to see who all of his appointees are. And I'm going to make a list for myself and put them in front of me. And I'm going to judge the list. First, I'm going to look at them individually, but then I'm going to judge it as a whole. In other words, I'm going to look for patterns amongst all of his appointees that he's made and just see where he's coming from. There is a risk that that Mr. Trump is a technocrat in the sense that he's just going to pragmatically fix everything. There is a risk, it'd be a better risk, that he's going to change some social and domestic policies that will give us some relief, even if it's just a little bit. I think anybody would be happy to receive whatever relief they can. But it's too early to tell. And there is some sense of it early on that he's involved with some people from the establishment, people like his new NSA, the National Security Advisor, James Woolsey. He was director of the CIA under Bill Clinton. It's kind of an odd choice for the NSA. And, you know, we've got other people around. The name for Secretary of Treasury that's been floated is Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan. I don't think he's going to get it, but just the fact that his name is floated is astounding to me because, you know, Trump was running on a, you know, kind of an anti-bankster platform,
right.
Anti-globalist platform, and Jamie Dimon is the very poster child for globalism. So, you know, I think the jury's still out totally. But a month from now, if you want to call back and ask me that a month from now, I will have something more definitive to tell you.
Well, I know he ticked off a lot of Republicans. I saw the other day, we reported upon it, how he's standing behind sodomite marriage and basically said it's the law of the land, I can't do nothing about it. And a lot of Republicans were just like, you know, sour face as if they thought he was going to do something. But that, yeah, a lot of the names that I'm seeing, there's just a lot of neocons, it seems, already. I mean, again, I would say most people who follow my website are cautiously optimistic. I mean, certainly, if you want to argue the lesser two evils, he wasn't purported as a Hillary Clinton type. But yeah, I think a lot of people are like, I think we'll just, you know, sit and we'll wait and we'll see. But you also just, I think, did an article, what was this, yesterday, talking about the UN Secretary General saying in relation to climate change that in action, you know, it's going to be unstoppable even with Trump in office. Maybe you could break down that article.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, of course, the United Nations is not just going to roll over 50 years of effort, you know, to say, well, now we got Trump in there, we better just quit and all go home. They're in this for the long haul. And I might add, they have 193 nations of the world that have already signed on to their agenda.
Yeah.
All those commitments, all those different nations of the world. And that means they have a hold. The United Nations is not exactly the puppet master, but very close. They have control over these other 193 nations. And do you think that those 193 nations could possibly exert any pressure on the United States to comply or to at least isolate us from affecting the rest of the global, you know, the global plan? Well, of course they can. Of course they will. I don't agree. I take the Secretary General's statement as a challenge. You know, my personal challenge, we will stop you, Mr. Kim Jong-un. But, you know, they're not going away. And, you know, they, in their view, and I think they're probably correct to a large extent for the time being, it is unstoppable. Nobody's really going to push this back to the United Nations. Even if the United States were to withdraw from the United Nations entirely, which I don't think is going to happen, the United Nations would still go on. Even if they kicked the UN out of New York City and took their building back, how would that be for an eminent domain claim? I'd love it. Send them to Kenya or somewhere. You know, let them build another building over there. But even if we got rid of them and got them out of our country, that wouldn't stop the United Nations from continuing their agenda. So unfortunately, the way I look at it, only the citizens of the nations concerned at this point are the hope of the future, not the leaders of the nations. It's not the leaders of groups like the United Nations. Only the people of a country are going to be able to make a difference in their own individual country to get rid of some of this garbage.
Yeah, I think it's a situation where, I mean, from my perspective, I think the only way that we can get back into control is through God's hand. I mean, I think divine chastisement is near. You know, a lot of these things that we've been talking about from a prophetic standpoint, we think are close. We see a lot of these earth changes, birth pangs happening. And, you know, these rats, these freaks, however you want to call it, they've got underground bunkers, which they're going to flee to as Planet X gets closer, in my opinion. But, you know, I've always said this, Patrick, you ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, if you think things are bizarre now, just wait till they start purporting, you know, the whole alien propaganda. We even have Francis coming out saying he would baptize aliens. I mean, wait till that new science comes out. A lot of stuff still on the horizon to where it's, you know, I always say this. We live in a giant Jerry Springer show, and it's not like we're watching. I mean, we're actually in it and living it, and most people don't realize it. But, yeah, appreciate the talk today, Patrick. I'm going to give you a few minutes here at the end to do some shameless self-promotion, but I just – you know, I just wanted to thank everyone for their continued prayers and support of this apostolate. Please subscribe to Tradcat Night right now. Spread word amongst your friends, family members, church members. Also, get to Patrick's website. He could reiterate this here in a second, but it's technocracy.news. And he might even have some other websites to give to us here in a second. But you know, I really appreciate the talk, Patrick. A lot of meat in this talk. Appreciate the angle and analysis that you provide. So I'll allow you the last few minutes here. You know, upcoming articles, projects, media appearances, other websites, books, lay it all on us.
Well, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on and express this. I've dedicated my life at this point to exposing technocracy and all the other things we've been talking about. It needs to be exposed, my opinion. That's why I created Technocracy News a little over a year ago. And people can go there and get on the mailing list. They'll get a daily synopsis, digest of the articles that I post from all over the world. It's not just me writing these articles. You need to see what these people are saying from their own lips. And you can't make this stuff up. You have to listen to them to believe it. And it's not difficult. But I have a lot of material on there. We've posted over 1,000 articles in the last 11 months or so, and so it's a research treasure trove at this point as well. But on the front page of my website, you'll also see a link to my book Technocracy Rising. It's no matter where you buy it, it's always under $20. You can buy it in volume for down as low as $10 a copy, but it's available there. I love to send out autographed copies if you buy it from my website. However, you can also buy it from amazon.com. And there's a Kindle version on Amazon.com as well, if you like to read off of a computer or a Kindle Fire or whatever. Either way, don't think that listening to this interview is going to give you everything you need to know about technocracy. If you really want to know all the details and connect all the dots, you've simply just got to buy the book. I don't say that to be shameless, but that's the fact of the matter. There's too much detail that you need to see in kind of a measured pattern where you can sit down and read and think and underline and mark up and, you know, take notes or whatever. But if you spend, half a day, 2 days, 3 days with this book, you will get it and you will connect the dots. And I will contend again, you cannot defeat an enemy that you do not know. And so we need to square up with reality on what's going on out there in the world. This is one way you can do it.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying now for a while. Got to know the enemy, folks. Can't go into a war and not know the enemy, where it's going to be, how it thinks, how it operates. And again, I appreciate Patrick coming on, dropping us the knowledge that he has, his analysis. We definitely got to get you back on here in the next, you know, a few months or so. And I just want to remind everyone, we have special guests coming to you Monday through Friday on Tradcat Night Radio. And amongst all the other alternative news sites that are picking us up now, I'm not sure if many of you know this, but I was picked up by Veterans Today, which is a top 20,000 website. They're actually even larger than us in terms of a following. So you'll see this radio talk and all my radio shows now featured on their website as well. And that is not even a Catholic channel. I mean, that's just a kind of a hodgepodge of everyone. So that's, you know, some wonderful news there. But yeah, appreciate it, Patrick, for coming on. In all this that we talk about, as I mentioned, you know, we shouldn't succumb to despair, doubt, worry. We know in the end that things work out. So I always just say, as an eagle, spread your wings in faith and hope, and let's allow these, the tribulations and trials that we have to simply take us to the next level, if you will. And that's what eagles do. They take the great storm head on. It's the only bird that does it. So let's not fly away to the mountain like the other, effeminate birds, if you will, the metrosexual birds. And let's face this thing head on, because, you know, that's what's going to happen. Eventually, they've got a plan to go underground. They're going to leave us up here. And we will make it through, folks. I mean, I'm not saying everyone, suggesting everyone, but, you know, God is definitely preparing us for the times ahead and putting the right people in places. So, without further ado, appreciate it, Patrick. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe and God bless.